a foggy day in London town had me low.
Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet 'em, greet 'em, treat 'em, and street 'em. Today's date is November 21st, 2015, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is A Foggy Day: Endovascular Thrombectomy for Acute Ischemic Stroke. And our guest skeptic is Dr. Rory Spiegel. Rory is doing a resuscitation fellowship at Stony Brook in New York City. He also writes a wonderful blog called EM Nerd: Nihilism, Medicine, and the Art of Doing Nothing. Welcome to the SGEM, Rory.
Thanks, Ken. I'm really excited to be here.
Yeah, well, you know what? Last time we were together, it was on stage in Chicago at SMAC, and we did a debate on whether or not you should be reading the primary literature.
Yeah, and if I remember correctly, a few punches were thrown that were below the belt.
There were a few ad hominem attacks, I admit it. But you know what? Rory, you impressed me with both your knowledge and your understanding of evidence-based medicine.
Thank you, Ken. But whatever I've learned is from people like you and Dr. Hoffman, who have dedicated their careers to evidence-based medicine.
Well, that's very kind of you to say. But recently, you wrote a very good blog entry that caught my skeptical eye. It was about thrombectomy for stroke, and you called it The Adventures of the Cardboard Box Revisited. What inspired you to write this blog?
Well, mostly the inspiration came from the common misconception that meta-analyses are the pinnacles of evidence, when in reality they are just statistical manipulations of existing data. I've been hoping to write a piece like this for some time now, and the publication of the Badawala and all paper was fortuitous.
Well, we've covered thrombolysis for stroke many times on the SGEM, including the classic 1995 New England paper. That episode was with Swami, and we called it The Secret of NINS.
I remember it was one of my SGEM favorites, though I often wonder why no one's ever done a journal club on ECAS 1 or 2.
Yeah, interesting, isn't it? But you want to guess what my position is on TPA for stroke, Rory?
Well, if I had to guess, I believe you remain skeptical.
Yeah, always go with the null hypothesis, yeah. But we're not talking about thrombolysis today, but rather thrombectomy. So give us a case to frame our discussion.
All right. A 78-year-old woman presents to your emergency department with right arm weakness and slurred speech for the last 2 hours. She has a history of hypertension and diabetes. A CTA is performed that shows an intracranial arterial occlusion of the right M1 middle cerebral artery segment.
Yeah, and prior to the publication of Mr. Clean and the four trials published in its wake, the data regarding endovascular therapy has been consistently negative.
Right, Ken. But over the last year, 5 RCTs examining endovascular therapy for acute ischemic stroke have been published. In direct contrast to those first 3 trials in 2013, all of these recent trials were impressively positive.
But because of the methodological flaws, the true size of benefit these interventions provide is still unclear. Without an understanding of the effect size, it's really difficult to assess whether the benefit justifies the resources required to support its implementation on a national level. But can you give us a clinical question we're going to try to answer today?
Sure. Do endovascular therapies for acute ischemic stroke lead to improved neurological outcomes when compared to medical therapies alone? And what is the effect size?
And you've already mentioned the reference, but to remind everybody, it's Badawala et al., Endovascular Thrombectomy for Acute Ischemic Stroke, a Meta-Analysis in JAMA 2015. So let's go through the PICO there, Rory. What's the population?
Well, it varied depending on the primary trial's inclusion and exclusion criteria, but essentially it examined patients presenting with signs and symptoms of acute ischemic stroke with either clinical or radiographic evidence of large vessel occlusion conducive for endovascular intervention.
And what was the intervention?
They used various endovascular therapies, including intraarterial TPA and clot retrieval devices.
And what was their comparator?
The comparator was optimal medical therapy, which included the use of IV TPA in the majority of the patients.
And what was their primary outcome?
The authors chose to examine functional neurological status at 3 months as assessed by an ordinal analysis of the modified Rankin scale.
And so the authors' conclusions were, quote, Among patients with acute ischemic stroke, endovascular therapy with mechanical thrombectomy versus standard medical care with TPA was associated with improved functional outcomes and higher rates of angiographic revascularization, but no significant difference in symptomatic intracranial hemorrhage or all-cause mortality at 90 days. Now, Rory, there's 7 quality checklists that we have for systematic reviews, and we're just going to run through those now.
Yeah, let's do it.
So the first question, the clinical question, is it sensible and answerable?
Sensible, yes. Answerable with the current data, no.
Number 2, the search for the studies, was it detailed and exhaustive?
Yes, it was, but the study selection was questionable.
Number 3, the primary studies, were they of high methodological quality?
Variable.
The assessment of the studies, were reproducible?
Yes.
And the outcomes, were they clinically relevant?
That would be questionable. Okay.
All right, the 6th question, there was low statistical heterogeneity for the primary outcome.
No, there was definitely high statistical heterogeneity.
Oh, that's your first solid no. I'm sure we're going to talk more about that in the nerdy section. The 7th question and final question, the treatment effect, was it large enough and precise enough to be clinically significant?
Large enough, yes. Precise enough, no.
Well, let's run through some of those results. In their pooled analysis, the authors found a shift towards improved functional outcome at 90 days in the patients randomized to receive endovascular therapy when compared to standard care. But what were the actual numbers there, Rory?
Well, when they used an ordinal analysis, it's a little hard to tell, but it translates into a 44.6% versus 31.8% alive and independent at 90 days.
And that favored the intervention. And this difference demonstrates an odds ratio of 1.56, with the confidence interval going from 1.1 to 2.1, which translates into a 12% absolute increase in the amount of patients alive and independent at 90 days. How about harm?
The authors found no difference in symptomatic intracranial hemorrhage, which is 5.7% versus 5.1%, or in 90-day all-cause mortality.
Okay, so it's time to talk a little nerdy here, Rory.
Though the question of whether endovascular therapy for acute ischemic stroke is an important one, whether it was answerable through a meta-analysis of the current literature is far less clear.
Yeah, the assumed benefit to performing a meta-analysis is that the summation of the data set provides a more accurate description of the true effect size than each individual data set can provide.
Right, exactly. And these trials examine different populations using different inclusion and exclusion criteria and different treatment strategies. Essentially, they examine different groups.
And that gets us to our first main point, and that's heterogeneity. And we've talked about this before in the SGEM. A way to quantify heterogeneity is by using the I-squared test. And this study has high heterogeneity. It was around 75% for its primary outcome. This questions whether the data should have been combined in a meta-analysis. So let's briefly here, Rory, briefly, talk about a fixed effect versus a random effect model to analyze the data.
Sure, Ken. The assumed benefit to performing a meta-analysis is that the summation of these data sets provide a more accurate description of the true effect size than each individual data set can provide on its own. This supposition, of course, rests on the notion that all studies included in the meta-analysis are examining the same study population, and that the variance of these results is due to random errors in sampling.
Yeah, and this is what is known as the fixed effect model. Unfortunately, most data is not so homogeneous, and it is common for the variations observed between trials to be due to more than just random error, but to considerable differences in the populations being considered. In such cases, the results of a direct pooled analysis will likely deviate from reality. Statistical models that attempt to account for these random deviations should be utilized, and this is what's known as the random effect models.
Right, exactly. And the authors used the I-square index to assess the degree of variation between the studies. The I-square index essentially describes the extent of variation across the trials that cannot be explained by random chance. An I-square of 0 implies that the variation observed between the trials can be accounted completely by random errors in sampling. Conversely, an I-square of 75 means that only 25% of the variation can be accounted for by sampling error. In the Badawala et al. Meta-analysis, the I-square index was 75, so correctly, they used a random effect model.
Well, Rory, I think we may have lost a few people there with our nerdiness, but I'll put in some links in the show notes for further reading. But let's move through our critical analysis. The next point we wanted to make was about the included studies. And though the authors did do a search for a studies that was exhaustive, they were very particular about which trials they selected.
Correct. In fact, it seems the authors knew which trials would be included in the analysis before conducting it, and the systematic review was merely perfunctory.
The third point, stopping trials early. A number of the more recent studies included in this analysis were stopped early. This was after the positive results seen in the Mr. Clean trial. Due to the premature stoppage of these trials, the data is likely to be distorted from reality. This makes it even harder to interpret the point estimate of effect size. And we should be very skeptical of the results from any study stopped early. The fourth point, time is brain. Boy, we've heard that one before, haven't we, Rory?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, one of the subgroups the authors examined in their secondary analysis was whether time to randomization had any effect on the efficacy of endovascular therapy.
Now, this was a really interesting one. Specifically, they looked at the time from symptom onset to randomization. They examined the effect size of endovascular therapy as compared to standard care, depending on whether patients were randomized before or after 3 hours from symptom onset. Temporality did not seem to affect outcomes, once again calling into question the time is brain mantra so frequently proclaimed.
And the last and fifth point was ordinal analysis. The authors utilized an ordinal analysis of the modified Rankin scale for their primary outcome. An ordinal analysis is a statistical attempt to assess the shift of outcome across the entire modified Rankin scale.
Yeah, and this always bothers me. This statistical manipulation assumes the reliability of the scale used to measure functional status. It has been shown many times that when two neurologists assess the same patient, their MRS assessment can vary wildly. This scale is hardly granular enough to apply an ordinal analysis with any accuracy.
And we've seen a classic example in the stroke literature where a dichotomous outcome, alive and independent, versus dependent dead, showed no statistical difference, but a secondary ordinal analysis did show a difference, and that was the IST3 trial.
Oh, yes.
But that's it for talking nerdy. Let's comment on the author's conclusions and compare them to the SGEM conclusions.
Okay. The authors are likely correct in their assessment that endovascular therapy for acute ischemic stroke leads to improved functional outcomes when compared to medical therapy alone. And yet the true effect size is still unknown.
So what you're saying, Rory, is that there probably is this signal in all of that noise.
Yes, it's fair to say, but what the signal-to-noise ratio exactly is, it's much harder to discern.
Well, what's hard is to give a bottom line, but can you give it a try?
I'll give it a shot, Ken. Despite its methodological rigor, the Badwala et al. Meta-analysis brings us no closer to certitude. It serves to place an objective number on the current ambiguous state of the data concerning endovascular therapy for acute ischemic stroke.
So what I think I hear you saying, Rory, is it's a foggy day for endovascular treatment for acute ischemic stroke.
I think that's a fair statement, Ken. The inherent value of the statistical manipulations in this pooled data set is unclear. This analysis provides little utility over our unstructured judgment of each respective trial's importance, while validating our suspicion that these trials are examining very different populations.
So can you give us a case resolution there, Rory?
Well, Ken, I work at the Intergalactic Space Station of Stroke Care, so I would activate the stroke team, and the rest would be out of my hands, for better or worse.
Yeah, it's a little bit more complicated when you're in the community setting like I am. So when I see this patient, I'm going to have to transport them to one of these intergalactic centers. And, you know, that adds a layer of complexity on whether or not we should actually be doing this, because it's going to take more resources, more time, more staff, all of those things to actually address this person's stroke.
Yeah, that's a far more interesting and difficult question.
So how are we going to take this meta-analysis and apply it clinically?
That's a good question. The recent trials on endovascular therapy for acute ischemic stroke have demonstrated that there's likely a subset of stroke patients who will benefit from reperfusion therapy. This is a small portion of patients that present to the emergency department with CVA. They also demonstrated that this subset of patients is more accurately identifiable with the use of advanced perfusion imaging rather than an empiric time since symptom onset that we have more traditionally used. what this true extent of benefit is yet still unclear.
So here's how I'm going to try to take this sort of difficult information and talk to the patient. I might say, it appears you're having a stroke. There's a blockage of blood flow to part of your brain. You do have some treatment options. Each option carries potential benefit and potential harm. One involves a clot-busting drug to try to dissolve the clot. Another option is a special type of surgery called endovascular surgery. It can potentially remove the blockage and restore the blood flow. Both have the risk of bleeding and, in some cases, even death. But they also have the potential to improve your weakness in speech. Another option is to do nothing and see if you get better. This, too, is not without risk. However, the stroke team will be here soon. They can talk with you about your various options in more detail. I'm around and happy to answer any questions you may have to the best of my ability.
That sounds pretty good, Ken. I think that's the best we could do with the current data we have.
Is there anything else then, Rory, that you want to say on this topic?
I think even the biggest cynics must concede at this point that there is a signal of benefit demonstrated throughout these recent trials. How much is due to the true effect of the treatment in question, and how much is in fact due to statistical noise is far more difficult to discern.
But that's not stopped the AHA from making some recommendations for the use of endovascular therapy in this population.
Yeah, and even more concerning was their wholehearted support of the development of a regionalized system capable of instituting the use of endovascular therapy at a national level.
Yeah, that is concerning. Well, that brings us to the Keener contest. Last week's winner was Sean Murphy, a physician's assistant from Parry Sound. He knew Stayin' Alive by the Bee Gees had been suggested as a song to think about when performing chest compressions. Rory, what have you got for a Keener question this week?
Well, I think it's only fair we do one on Sherlock Holmes. In The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, who is Captain Basil and how is he related to the great detective?
Rory, a great way to tie in the theme music of A Foggy Day in London and your admiration for Sherlock Holmes. Well, if you know the answer, then send an email to thesgem@gmail.com with Keener in the subject line. The first correct answer will receive a cool skeptical prize. Well, thanks, Rory, for coming on the SGEM.
Thank you, Ken. The honor was all mine.
Hey, do you have any plans after your fellowship?
Funny you should ask. Could you ask all interested employers to send their inquiries to my personal Gmail account?
This is somebody that you want to have on staff. This is a bright rising star in the world of emergency medicine. So if you're out there, you're an employer, then get a hold of Rory Spiegel. Is that good enough for you, Rory?
That sounds great.
All right. Will you be going to SMAC in Dublin this next year?
Yes, I'll be there, and I expect us to start up where we left off last year.
Yeah, maybe they'll give us another debate that we can do.
I hope so.
Well, I'm going to be actually going to do another SGEM Journal Club in the near future. I'm traveling to your nation's capital early in December, and I'm really looking forward to giving grand rounds at the George Washington EM program and record a live episode of the SGEM.
Fantastic. What article will we be covering?
Oh, I don't want to spill the beans too soon, but we're going to be looking at subarachnoid hemorrhage in the community setting.
Oh, excellent. Well, they're a lucky residency.
So as the guest skeptic, you get to give the SGEM tagline, Rory.
All right. Remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you've heard it on the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Talk to everyone next week.
A foggy day in London town.